This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. Social media continues to break new ground, both in how it is used and in who uses it. Once social media reached a critical mass of users, its impact was quickly felt, and almost as quickly, advertisers came to understand its power. They searched, sometimes with great success, for ways to use it to reach customers and potential customers, and that search continues, of course. But, of course, they just as quickly discovered that the message had to be different, tailored not only to the recipient, but to that person's expectations of the kinds of communication they find acceptable in this new media. Well, if social media works for commercial concerns, why can't it work for nonprofits who usually don't have the money to advertise or market and who may have a mission and a message that social media users might actually find appealing? Well, the answer is it can work, and there are people and companies in Charlotte who are on the forefront of creating social media strategies for nonprofits to use. And we've invited a few of them to join us for the hour. Chris Mead is director of Empower Charlotte Region. They provide what they describe as comprehensive, high-quality, and affordable technology assistance to nonprofits. It goes way beyond social media, but that's part of the, of what you provide, correct?
Absolutely.
Welcome to the program.
Thanks. Pleasure to be here.
Brandon Utley guides social media strategy at Ray Ward, a creative marketing communications agency. Mr. Utley is also co-founder of a web development firm and currently owns Web Business Freedom. That's a strategic web consultancy. Thank you for being here as well.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome. And we welcome back Wynn Madry, the Executive Vice President of Topics Education, a strategic communications company that works with businesses and nonprofits locally, regionally, and nationally. And I think you were on this program the first time in the first year of this program.
I think it was 1997.
Yeah, so you're 19 now.
Exactly.
Right? Okay, just checking.
Thanks for having me back.
You're welcome. When you read about social media, whether it's on the internet or in the newspaper this morning, for instance, or wherever, you get the feeling, in fact, it's more than a feeling, you actually read these words that you should, that you must be part of this social phenomenon, both as a human being, as an individual, and if you're in business and if you're a nonprofit, you must be part of this. Is that really true, or is that an exaggeration by partisans?
Well, you know, I think that there is some irrational exuberance, just like we had with the web years ago. But right now, it's so exciting because the opportunity to connect with your friends, people that you know, your close circle of associates, mm-hmm. and then beyond that is so incredibly available now with these tools like Facebook and LinkedIn. So it's just the thing that people are doing now. And it also helps us all cut through the clutter of the internet and all the rest of the media to find out what people are really talking about.
The thing people are doing now is what you just said, and that's what concerns me about this. Because if you're an individual, you can invest as much time as you have time to invest in all of this with very little outlay of cash. It's pretty cheap to do this. All you need is a computer or some sort of interface with the internet, and you can Twitter and you can blog and you can do all those things we're going to be talking about today. But if you're a nonprofit with limited resources, or a business with limited resources, is it dangerous to get on this platform because it's the thing to do now? How long will it be the thing to do? We have this trend. We have this trend in this country being very faddy, and things are in and then they're out.
Well, I still think it's a choice. I was strongly encouraged by my wife last night that she's not going to do this. She's never going to do this. It does not appeal to her.
I like your wife.
and she said it's not a fit for her, and that's a personal choice.
And she's young, obviously. Why would she be that way?
I think part of what she said, and similar to what Marcy Kelso said yesterday, is of the Light Factory. She said she's worried she'll become addicted to Facebook.
Well, that is a worry.
Mm-hmm. And she also has some concern of where's the productivity. You know, if I'm spending this time doing stuff, am I really getting things done?
But do we care about the productivity if we get results? I mean, if you're a business or a nonprofit and you're putting things out there and people are responding to you and people are following you and you are following them and you're seeing results.
You know, I think the vast majority of nonprofits are, in fact, small businesses. So I think the rules for nonprofits and small businesses, you know, here really are the same. Results matter, and if individuals are connecting with each other, what I might call friend raising in the nonprofit space, you need to be there. that's where people are connecting. And I think nonprofits in particular are all about relationships. Mm. So if that's where new relationships are being formed, especially among those that have the time or want to make the time, if you're not part of that conversation and helping to direct it, then you know you're out of the loop.
Mm-hmm. I think the first time that you were on this program with Madri was we were talking about Gen X.
I think that's with Cam Marston and Chris Kieber eons ago.
Excuse me. You weren't part of that discussion? Gen X have certain expectations, just like the boomers had certain expectations. They see the world in a certain way. Are younger people more apt to respond to nonprofits in this environment? Does this kind of an environment, first of all, it's their hot button, but are the things that nonprofits are talking about also one of their hot buttons, and this is a good place to marry the two?
Well, not necessarily. And that's one misperception is that it's just the kids that are doing it. And it's the kids that we need to reach because they'll influence everyone else. In fact, there was a study done back in February, the Community Philanthropy 2.0 survey. And they found that among those that are most likely to give to nonprofits, and they've defined that as $1,000 or more, the under 30 crowd was very unlikely to do that. You know, less than 10%. So you're looking at more of the...
Would they be likely to volunteer, though?
They may be likely to volunteer and spread your messages. So, you know, you would want to reach out to them. But where the dollars are is that 30 to 49 and the 50-plus crowd.
So let's talk about who's actually using MySpace and Twitter and LinkedIn and some of these other social network appliances, if that's the right word. Who's actually using them? What age groups are actually involved in participating?
Well, I think the research is showing that increasingly we're seeing growth really across all those demographics, and especially in some of the older generations who maybe have the time and want to connect with their children or grandchildren and see photos and things like that. So if you as an organization can put a page out there and and make it compelling and give them an action to take, I think you can encounter some of these other users that we don't typically associate with social media, but are in fact where a lot of the new growth of users are happening now.
Hmm. And I'd also say that users is a pretty loose term. So they're the people who are inactives who may read things or monitor stuff from afar. They're spectators who occasionally may get drawn in the conversation. And on the other extreme, you get the people who blog and tweet and do stuff and are very, very active.
The participators.
Right.
And
a nonprofit needs to find which are those that align with volunteers or donors or whatever groups they're trying to
What are the stakes here for not being involved in social media if you are a nonprofit today? And what's the payoff if you are?
Well, I have a little bit of a background from the college and university fundraising space, and some of the research there shows a couple of interesting things. One, donors, large donors, $1 million plus, all gave within their first couple of years after graduating, which suggests as young alumni, they got engaged with the college or university. The same rules apply in the nonprofit space. The sooner you engage somebody at a younger age, and that's not about giving necessarily, it can also be volunteerism, the more likely downstream they're going to make that big gift because you're building a long-term relationship. So I think it's real important not to, immediately jump to the dollars, but really first start with the relationship.
Is it as important to be a part of the Twitter world and the Facebook world for an organization as it is to have a website? You pretty much have to have a website today.
You need to have a website, and increasingly you also need a blog.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, that's the common wisdom right now is between having a website and a blog, those are the real places that you can control. You can make it look how you want. You can put the content that you've crafted and put it on there and, to a degree, control it. Otherwise, most of this stuff is out of your control, and people have to realize that. Once you're participating in Facebook and all these other networks, you have to open yourself up to criticism, negative comments, and, sort of a free-for-all, and you have to be prepared for that. And a lot of organizations are terrified, and so they sit back and they wait, and to your point, what are they missing? Well, they are missing the opportunity to connect with volunteers. They're missing the opportunity to raise money. So, in fact, there are a lot of examples of organizations that find out after the fact that people are doing things on their behalf that they weren't even aware of.
That's Brandon Utley, who's a social media strategist for Ray Ward Communications. Also with us, Chris Mead, the executive director of NPower Charlotte Region, and Wynn Madry, executive vice president of Topics Education. They're all involved in this, and we have posted all of their Twitter, Facebook, and LinkedIn information on our website. So if you want to follow these gentlemen during and after this program and forevermore, you may do so at WFAE.org/CharlotteTalks. We know that, I know from previous programs that we've done on social media, that although messages do get out from commercial enterprises to people and get passed around, that you have to talk to people in a different way than you would in a commercial or on a newspaper ad or something like that. You have to, it's a two-way conversation. When this program first got on Twitter, the Twitterers were very excited that we were part of it and then became very angry at us because we didn't follow them. And so you have to make plans for that. How do you reach people? What's the message? How do you craft the message? What does it have to be like to attract people, to get their interest, to make them follow you?
I think it has to be authentic. And it needs to, you know, you have to kind of begin with where the questions are and where your questions are and be willing to listen as well as talk. And it really becomes a conversation. And in that sense, you're maybe helping to steer or guide where some passion already is rather than sort of command and control and trying to dictate what that message is. It is messy, but if it's perceived as not authentic, people will disappear real
fast.
What
does that mean, authentic? What does it mean?
Well, and I think related to that is if you think of the cable channel or DirecTV as an analogy, people are going to watch certain channels or they're going to watch a group of channels. And so depending on how you can target people solely through Twitter if they're Twitterers, mm-hmm. or you can target people who are social media people. So you might have a website which links to the blog, which Twitter has a headline every time you post to the blog. So it all works together. Similar to every office has a fax machine, U.S. mail, email, a phone. How are you using those tools? You're not faxing people every day to put your message out, so you need to find the one that fits.
But you don't want to bombard people. I mean, if it's all connected and every time you do something in one piece of social media, it's immediately transmitted on another piece of social media, then, I mean, you are really bombarding people. How do you know you're not knocking on the door too many times?
Well, you know, Jeff Elder was on your show recently, and he talked about the idea of this being this giant river of information, and we're not all in that river at any given time. So the idea of somebody seeing the same thing twice is probably highly unlikely. Even though people spend an average of 20 minutes a day on Facebook, you know, that's just hit or miss.
So how do you get your three frequency? You need to get a three frequency.
That's right. That's the common wisdom, and I think that might be changing. Absolutely. You know, it's a new world, and frankly, communications companies like the one I work with and others are trying to figure this stuff out.
So
is a two-way two-way, and to the authentic part, it's about, you know, don't give me your carefully crafted message. I want the real you. I mean, we've seen what happens when people don't trust organizations, and that trust just vanishes, mm-hmm. you know, especially in the nonprofit world. In Charlotte, we've seen that. People quit giving, and then, that leads to a terrible trickle-down effect where people on the streets are affected.
So what is the real you? I mean, how do you know you're being – if you're putting the real you out there as you see it, how do you know it's being perceived that way?
Well, I think
that's just another –
a great place to start sometimes is with that negative feedback, one of the fears, right, of why we shouldn't be here. But I think when you respond – to negative criticism, you have the opportunity to turn that into a positive and really prove that, in fact, you are authentic. And so I think, you know, that's a key point. Take what's already an issue or a concern for folks and turn that around.
That's Chris Mead with the NPower Charlotte Region. Also with us, Brandon Utley from Ray Ward and Wynn Madry from Topics Education. We're going to continue with this, and we have a studio audience full of nonprofit people, I believe, here today, taking notes, which is odd. Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Our program is made possible in part today by WTVI presenting the PBS special Love Me Tender, The Songs of Elvis, a live broadcast August 16th at 8 p.m. The Life and Times of the King and the Love Songs Which Seem to Mirror His Career. Well, tomorrow on this program, we're going to take a look at people who may be cheating you. Bernard Madoff comes to mind. Of course, he's already in prison, and his cohort is turning state's evidence. But he's not the first person, and he isn't alone in his thievery. And we're going to talk about how often people may be being taken advantage of and how you know or how you can protect yourself from this in an encore presentation of Charlotte Talks tomorrow at 9.
An update on the security crisis in the Democratic Republic of Congo. Secretary of State Clinton is pressing for prosecution in the rape of thousands of women and girls and has pledged millions in U.S. funds for medical aid. The Diane Rehm Show, Thursday.
The Diane Rehm Show this morning from 10 to noon on 90.7 FM WFAE, your NPR news source.
It's Charlotte Talks on Listener Funded, 90.7 WFAE and 90.3 WFHE. I'm Mike Collins, another in our series of shows on social media. And today we're taking a look at how social media can be used effectively, we hope, by nonprofits who, gosh knows, have no money to advertise or market. And this may be a boon for them because this is relatively cheap, if not almost free. Chris Mead is Executive Director of Empower Charlotte Region. Brandon Utley is a social media strategist at Ray Ward Communications. Wynn Madry is Executive Vice President of Topics Education. It may be almost free, but it really isn't, because it seems to me as we talk about this, and you talk about, I think, Chris, it was you who talked about the importance of not only putting things out, but listening, that it takes people to put things out, and it takes people to listen. And when you're putting things out on Facebook and MySpace and Twitter and a couple of other things, there are millions of these things now, it seems to me, that it requires manpower and hours of manpower to do it effectively.
Absolutely, and that's the thing that people quickly realize. It does take a lot of time, and you need champions, that people that will do this and take it seriously and carve out blocks of time, you know, each day or during the week to do this. For example, there, you know, nonprofits are now hiring people to do this, or working with agencies or asking volunteers to do this. And typically when they hire people, I'm seeing people carve out a third of their time.
Yes.
To spend on monitoring what's being said about their organization or their cause or what have you, and then responding accordingly.
So what is the cost? There's a cost associated with this for nonprofits.
Well, the first cost is choice. If you spend an hour on Facebook, you're not spending it with a donor. Mm-hmm. You may not be training a volunteer. You may not be writing the annual report. So at some point, that opportunity cost of time, which is the true cost. So and so the nonprofits are making choices based on perceived free, but in reality, they have to make a time-based choice first to then get involved.
And it seems to me that most of the people who would be good at this, or if that's the right word, not good, but effective at it, who are fluent in the language and the equipment and what needs to be done to do all this, are younger people. Is the danger there? Maybe I'm wrong about this.
Yeah, I'm not sure I would agree with that. I would say it's the people who are fluent in the message of your organization. And that's, I think, age independent.
But then they have to learn how to use all these other sources.
They do have to learn how to use the tools. Absolutely. And that's where, though, I think maybe young people or volunteers, we talked about this yesterday at the panel, find a teenager. Go find somebody who can sort of co-pilot the person who has the message, who has the language, the ability to talk about your organization. Pair them with somebody who knows how to manipulate the tool. And if you can put those two people together, and usually that co-pilot can be a volunteer. They don't have to, you know that much about your organization. It's a great opportunity to plug them in.
But is it really that difficult? I mean, do you need the teenager forever, or would you would you be able to pick it up relatively quickly? I mean, it can't be rocket science.
It's not.
Not rocket science. Unless you work at NASA.
Well, and part of that, the goal of the message coming out of the organization is, how complicated do you want to make it? So if you're a nonprofit focused on health and human services, you could have a weekly tweet defining one term in your industry. Mm-hmm. So each week it could be defining, you know, human services. The next week could be a healthcare. And you just basically put a dictionary and put it out once a week. So you can have it written, and it just someone has to hit print or publish.
How do you know what I keep coming back to the message. How is it different from the messages that that these organizations put out in press releases, if they can afford commercial time, the message they put on a 30-second commercial or in a newspaper ad? How is the message different?
Well, those are controlled messages. You know, usually with a press release, for example, you've crafted that carefully. It's gone through probably many people to look at it. Mm-hmm. And then it's the official position of the organization. You put it out there. And when you do media relations, then, you know, the danger is you don't know how that's going to come out on your radio show or in the paper or whatever. So that's what public relations people do, is they try to carefully work with the media to present their side of the story, but then be open. But with social media now, the difference is the instant you put a message out there, people are going to say, I don't believe it, or, you know, this is my position on that. So you have to instantly be prepared for somebody to not agree with what you just said.
You know, on the one hand, that seems to be scary, because people are responding to you, and they may be responding to you in a negative way, and that's getting around the social media space. I don't know what to call it. I haven't got a language for this yet. But on the other hand, people have always done that. And when the stories came out about United Way, you don't think people were talking about that in the coffee shops and in the street? They didn't need social media to talk about that. They've been doing this all along.
No, but this amplifies that kind of message.
Okay.
Absolutely. And so whereas people may have been talking about that and it may have trickled down, you know, you got it for somebody at church or at work or what have you. This is the new water cooler.
So Marcy Kelso is sitting here, and she's with the Light Factory. I don't want to pick on you, Marcy, but I'm going to. So they have a show, and they put their message out about their show. You don't have to stand at the microphone, but I'm just using you. They put their message out about their show in their gallery, and what it's all about, who the photographers are, and why you should come and see it. I come and see it. I'm on Twitter. I don't like it. I'm standing in the thing. I'm standing right there in the exhibit, and I'm twittering away. Boy, here I am, and boy, this. Is there a danger in that? Is there a downside? Is the downside worse than the positive side of this?
Well, word of mouth is not new.
Okay.
I don't know if you want to.
Marcy is going to come to the microphone. Okay, go ahead.
What I would say is we have a mission to promote the power of image, and what is inherent in that is we want people to talk about film and photography. And we've got to understand that sometimes it's not going to be positive. But you know what? Art is important because of the reaction it engenders. And so if we can encourage that reaction, we are happy about it.
Okay. So I'm not Marcy Kelso. I'm Gloria Pace King at the United Way. And the story's coming out and in the paper about all of that. Do you talk about that on your United Way social media blog, Twitter, Facebook page, or do you?
Why not?
Yeah,
why
absolutely.
Not? I mean, you can. I think there's a great opportunity there. And if you don't talk about that, or you ignore it and pretend like the conversation isn't happening, then you're kind of burying your head in the sand. You know,
people are still very angry about that situation, mm-hmm. and I think Jane McIntyre and her staff have a huge challenge ahead of them. They cannot apologize enough. They, you know, and we were joking about that yesterday. I think for a long time, Jane's going to introduce meetings. Hi, I'm Jane, and I'm sorry. I'm still sorry. Because, you know, it's like the five stages of grief, but I mean, people were angry. They were in denial, you know, but ultimately, we are talking about people's lives at stake. So they need to say, we are truly sorry, and here's the steps we're taking to regain your trust. You know, back to the community philanthropy study, they found that what people really want, 80% of the folks surveyed say they want to know that they're dealing with a trustworthy organization. So trust is huge now. It's not just a buzzword. And to your earlier question, is this a fad? No, this is not a fad.
Okay.
This is not. The tools are going to change. So right now, you know, 250 million of us are on Facebook. 3 years from now, there may be something else shiny and new.
Right.
That we're all, you know, oh, look at this. So now we're all going to be on Google Wave or whatever the next tool is that comes out. But now we're all empowered. So we're just going to look for more tools and more ways to connect with each other.
Well, and I think it's also worth noting that this is the rise of social media is following the decline of traditional media. So newspaper decline, you know, obviously you can look at all the papers around the country struggling, TV, et cetera. And so that's the people who've opted out of that system are opting into this. Not exclusively, but there is a transition where people either want to be citizen journalists or they want to believe in they see their own bias out there perhaps. But I think that's worth noting that some people have eschewed the traditional channel and are going this route.
Okay.
And you know, a follow-on point to that, going back to your question about what does it cost, some of this is also about spending your money differently. And it may be that you have to buy more time from people, to craft your message, get it out there, monitor those things, but maybe that's not spending money in traditional media sources, print media, that sort of thing. So a little bit of that time factor can be picked up from a budget standpoint from maybe not spending dollars the way it used to.
But if you're pushing a message out in traditional media, you control it. In this, it seems to me, you don't have as much control. Once it's out, it's being manipulated and interpreted and retransmitted, and you lose control.
That's right. And so that is the new challenge, and that's what people are trying to figure out. And the answer is you just have to run with what happens.
Okay.
But companies need to use common sense and not have these knee-jerk reactions, such as you probably heard about a couple weeks ago when a woman in Chicago sent out a tweet and complained about mold in her apartment. And she mentioned her apartment complex by name. They turned around a couple days later and sued her for $50,000. Well, it became a huge backlash against this company. You know, people just angry at them for picking on the little guy, in this case, this, you know, woman in Chicago. Instead, they could have turned around and said, you know what, it's negative, but how about we send a crew out to her place, fix the problem, tweet about it, make a little YouTube video, say we're sorry, give her a free month rent, and then turn it into a positive. So instead, what they do, they sued her, and then they jokingly said, yeah, we're a sue first, ask questions later company. And so then they had to backtrack off of that statement. So they just keep digging a hole deeper.
Yeah. All right. And let's go to the microphone here.
This is Dee Grana with the Light Factory, and something that I wanted to say is sort of on Wynn's comment where, you know, I don't have a lot of dollars to place an ad, but there's also, you know, my press release doesn't go as farther as it did. So in our organization, Twitter is like my own AP newswire. And while I do control the message, and sometimes I don't control the message, if I can generate chatter, it's just as good as getting a story in the Observer or the Weekly or whatever there is out there, because I know that when I'm pitched 5 stories, only one might get covered, whereas everybody who's on my Twitter feed gets that message, whether or not they want to.
And there's also a network effect. So for every hour you spend on social media, to your point, that could be, you know, amplified or intensified by, you know, people sending it to their friends and they send it to their friends and so forth. So it could be more powerful to your niche audience as opposed to somebody reading something in the paper.
Why, from our, I think this is from our website, I think, I'm not sure exactly where this came from, but Dee Grana is right here. I'm going to read your comment. What did you do that on your little phone there?
I did.
What I experience as a marketing director of a nonprofit is that some nonprofit workers view social media as another thing to add to an already full, understaffed, and underpaid plate. We need to view it as community building, which is what we are charged to do to further the greater good. Let me see here. Another tweet from James. The world of social media is easing work-private life boundaries. Staff need to be committed to promote in private time space. Do you understand that comment? I'm not sure I do.
<No.
okay.
laughs>
I think what he's saying is that in some places you don't have access to Twitter and you don't have access to Facebook while you're at work because it takes you away from your work, and perhaps those rules need to be eased. I think that's what he's saying. I'm putting words into his
mouth. Yeah, there are a lot of debates going on now in big companies, especially, you know, because the irony is people are bringing in their smartphones and they're sitting next to their computer, which is locked down from allowing them to surf the web, and they're using their smartphone to communicate with their friends. So companies are saying, you know, they're going to be doing it anyway. We're censoring them in some case. But it is a productivity issue, and you can see that side of it as well.
And James has sent us a tweet. The world of social media is erasing work-private life boundaries. Staff needs to be committed to promote in private time and space. I'm not sure what that means either, but okay. another comment on Twitter. The first cost of social media is choice, the choice of how time is reallocated to allow for work in social media efforts. And J.B. Hethaw says, world of social media is erasing. We've already got that one. We just did that one off the screen. Sorry. I get things on paper and on the screen as well. We're still a paper-based program here. comment from Kathy on our website. I am the founder of a new nonprofit school, Charlotte Community School for Girls, a free school for middle school girls from low-income families that will open in 2010. I have already opened Twitter and Facebook sites for the schools. Our website is going to be up soon. Social media is a great way to educate followers, share news, garner support, Importantly, we will also use these tools to educate our students, and by the time they graduate, there will be some new social media tool that we will have to learn.
Yeah, I think it's great to hear about another new nonprofit. You know, historically, this was a way for folks in the U.S. before government could get out to the frontier to fill in the gaps, you know, to build schools and hospitals and all those sorts of things. And, you know, that continues today. And I think social media is making this much more affordable to build a community of support and to get your message out there. And I think it's just exciting to hear from somebody. And I think they represent exactly what's happening. When you see a new nonprofit, the social networking tools are a great, great place to get started.
So how should we be using, how should nonprofits be using this? How much time and personnel and effort can they put toward this? And how do you determine the return on investment?
Well, there are a lot of ways that you can measure what things are happening for you. How traditional metrics such as how many views you're getting back to your website or your blog, you know, how many people are engaging with you. And the real beauty of it is that engagement. When you start to get comments, when you ask people questions, when you take polls, for example, Google, for example, several years ago said that they consider the internet the world's largest focus group. So for nonprofits, they can really keep their finger on the pulse of what people want, what's important to their audiences. So, you know, those are ways that they can use these tools effectively.
And so you need to, so the nonprofit should first look at who does it serve? You know, what's that population look like? And are social media tools able to target that audience in some capacity, or do they need to use the tools to raise money, get volunteers, or advocate for the people they serve?
It just strikes me that there are some people, you know, we have a small studio audience this morning, and I'm just wondering how many of you get this and how many of you are still going, huh? Show of hands. The five people in the front row get it, and we have a bunch of other people going, so-so. Because it's until you understand the language, until you understand the milieu, I guess is the better way to put it. I don't know. You don't understand fully what we're talking about here. How do you get up to speed?
Well, you're not that far behind, first of all. I mean, the vast majority of organizations that are in social networking have been there for less than 2 years. So don't worry too much about it. It is a new space. And the best thing to do is not to worry about where exactly you're trying to get to, but to get started. It is an experiment, and we're all learning this together. That's kind of the fun of it. It is a community experience, and we're sharing those lessons.
And also the survey, they asked people what was the number one way you want to be communicated, and this crazy tool called email was the number one choice still. So, you know, most people use email, and to your point, Chris, you know, people feel like they're missing out. They're not. This stuff is very new.
The last show we did on social media, I was told that email was so yesterday that it's not.
And yet that person probably checked their email right before they walked in the studio. So.
Comment on our blog. I think my nonprofit is active with social media, though we are still having trouble fully harnessing its potential. Any tips on converting social media connections into real world in the door visitation numbers?
Sure. I think you can do things like put a promotion. I mean, no different than print advertising. Mention this ad for 10% off. Do things out there that have an incentive. Obviously, a nonprofit's not going to have a discount program, but use things that say, have people announce that I read this on your blog. I read this on your website. I read this on Twitter. So they're self-identifying their source, and then do something to reward them. A gift certificate, frequent flyer mile, whatever that is, to acknowledge, because some people are coming in through the door and you haven't asked that question.
We're going to take a break and come back with more. We have a gentleman standing at our microphone, and I'll come right to you following the break. We're talking about social media and how it can be put to good use by nonprofits. Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Our program is made possible in part today by the U.S. National Whitewater Center announcing the All-Sport Twilight Pass with access to whitewater rafting, mountain biking, climbing, and more, valid after 5 p.m. on Fridays, now through Labor Day. Details at USNWC. Coming up on the Diane Rehm Show at 10 o'clock, crisis in the Democratic Republic of Congo. Secretary of State Hillary Clinton calls the sexual violence in eastern Congo one of mankind's greatest atrocities. Diane hosts an update on the security crisis and what the U.S. and other nations can do to help stabilize that country. If you'd like to join our conversation, now is the time. 704-926-WFAE. That's 704-926-9323, 800-603-WFAE, or any other way possible. Imagine it. at WFAE.org/Charlotte Talks. You can also join us in our studio audience if time permits. We'll come back to that in a moment. And you can follow all of our guests today. We've posted their Twitter and MySpace and Facebook pages on our website.
I'm Melissa Block from NPR's afternoon news program, All Things Considered. There is a constant stream of information coming at you through the day, online, over the air, by word of mouth. At All Things Considered, we try to figure out what it means, why it happened, and how it will affect you. Join us every weekday afternoon, won't you? It's All Things Considered from NPR News.
Let All Things Considered help you understand the whole story, weekdays from 4 till 6:30 on 90.7 WFAE.
It's Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE and 90.3 WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking about social media and how it can be used by nonprofits. But, of course, if it applies to nonprofits, it applies to other entities as well. Brandon Nutley is with us. He's a social media strategist with Ray Ward Communications. Wynn Madry is Executive Vice President of Topics Education. Chris Mead is Executive Director of NPower Charlotte Region. And we have a gentleman at our microphone here at Spirit Square. Welcome.
Thank you very much, Mike. My name is Bernie Hargadon. And I'm delighted to be here today. I am not representing anybody but myself, but I do serve on the boards of Opera Carolina and also the Symphony. And what I can tell you, you asked a moment ago, how many of you here get it? I wasn't sure whether I should raise my hand or not. But I can tell you that much as I enjoy the program, I can't wait to leave here to get back to these organizations to tell them that they better get it. Thank you.
Wow.
That's fantastic, and we'd love to talk with them.
it seems to me that Opera Carolina would get it because they've always done a very good job of marketing, and that's what this boils down to, doesn't it? I mean, if you're using social media
it's
to get
talking
your message,
to people. Yeah. It's getting your message out there and having a conversation.
A comment from Leslie. I recently created a Facebook page as a way to promote our organization, the Teaching Fellows Institute, and as a way to keep alumni of our program engaged. Because we work closely with teachers, I was hesitant, assuming that few teachers have Facebook accounts. Boy, was I wrong. The 100-plus teachers in our group were ecstatic to have a way to stay connected now that a new school year is approaching. Most already have Facebook accounts and are eager to share their experiences, both personal and professional in nature. Getting back to this time issue, where organizations will have to devote somebody or some people to following and posting and crafting the message and getting it out there. Because most nonprofits are pressed for time and resources and personnel, should you just pick one of these social media and concentrate on it and do it really, really well, or should you spread yourself around?
I think it depends. I'm not trying to cop out with that, but you know, for an organization that, you know, let's say that they have a website where they have information, but they can't update on a regular basis. They might have a blog or something where they can have volunteer organizing. And so someone would be responsible for that, of getting people involved and engaged to come to stuff. Someone in the development office might have a whole different set of needs, and they may need to control their respective message. And so you wouldn't want a volunteer outreach coordinator handling development, and you probably don't want the same person who does advocacy, legislative issues, handling either the other two. So division of labor may make sense, and that may mean using different tools, or it may mean three or four different angles at Facebook or something to that regard.
I think one of the other important points there is also to use tools that your people are going to use on a regular basis. So not to spread yourself too thin, but for instance, if you're not into journaling, the idea of picking up and writing a blog is not natural to you. So maybe that's not a good place for you to start. Don't start with the blog. Maybe you'd be better with tweets. You know, writing 140 characters worth of text is more your style than, you know, three paragraphs on something. Mm-hmm. So I think picking things that are, you know, reflect the style of how you like to communicate as an individual, maybe in the print or paper world is a good place to think about.
You've already mentioned, Chris, that you need to be authentic, whatever that is, in your message. But it seems to me that if you want your message to go viral, and isn't that the goal? You want to get it out to as many people as possible, and you want it to be seen and shared and shifted around.
No, I don't know that I agree that it has to go to everybody, or it's about quantity.
Go to the right people.
The right people. Yeah.
So these things that have gone viral, from my experience, I'll get emails about, click on this link and go here. And
yeah, look at this great wedding video.
Yes, they're edgy.
Right.
Do you have to be edgy to be effective in this new world of social media? Or do you, can you be what you've always been? Authentic. Authentically you. I'm not saying that to be,
I think it's a fair question, and, it probably depends. Classic consulting answer, right?
Well, when typically when you try too hard, it comes across. So when you see these companies produce these videos that you can just look at it and tell they are trying to be funny and they're not funny. Mm-hmm. So, you know, the ones that are usually low budget, quickly done, that are just off the cuff, those are the types of things that typically are more authentic in that regard, because they're just genuine. They're from the moment, and they're not carefully planned.
I think that's right, and it has to match. What is that end goal that the nonprofit's using? I mean, if it's a cancer relief organization, joking is probably not going to be authentic for the organization's mission. Mm-hmm. On the business side, there's a viral example of the Will It Blend. I don't know if you know this, but it's a blender manufacturer. And
yes,
you can submit anything and they'll blend, they'll see if it'll blend and all that.
Yeah, they'll take your iPhone and, you know.
Blend to blender. Blend tech, right. Yeah. And that's a way, and you know, so that's a way that's authentic to the product. It could be construed as edgy, but it's really a product demonstration.
Yeah.
But it becomes viral. And so I think if you're an organization, you can look at things that resonate that would do the same.
When we think of nonprofits, a lot of us are thinking of United Way. We're thinking of these nonprofits that serve the human needs of people in the community. But there are also nonprofits like Light Factory, like theater companies, who have very limited budgets, who cannot advertise, whose lifeblood depends on getting an audience in to see whatever it is they are producing. Is the message different for those people? Is their usage of social media different than it would be if you are a homeless shelter and you're trying to raise money, or you're trying to get volunteers, or you're trying to raise awareness? Is there a difference in how you do it?
I think there can be, and it kind of goes back to the core of what their message may be. Obviously, the social services agencies are going to try and pull on the heartstrings. But everybody, whether you're in the arts, environment, or social services, you're going to want to put a face on what you do. And in fact, the arts have an advantage in that a lot of what they do is very visual.
Mm-hmm.
And so for them, you know, video blogs or, you know, using imagery and Flickr and photographs and things like this might be more effective for them. Whereas a story that's more textual might work better in a social service agency. So, I think it can depend, but, there are tools for each of those different styles.
Rob,
So if you had a homeless shelter and they had every week they did a training session for an hour or two or something like that, that's something you could put as a video, spend the 1 hour, film it, put it on the website. Anybody who's a new volunteer, you send them to the website or the blog or something, and you don't have to use that resource every hour, every week. So you're optimizing the time through the technology.
Why not put it on a DVD and hand it to them?
Well, then you've only got one.
Well, you can mass produce DVDs.
Sure, but then you got to mail it. But let's say people are signing up online, you can just say, if you're ready for the training, click here.
And because in using social media, you're using another company's resources for free. You're using YouTube's servers somewhere in the middle of nowhere to put your videos out there for free. So the book by Chris Anderson, who wrote The Long Tail, called Free, is just absolutely fascinating. All these tools that are free are being monetized as well, which is a topic of a previous show. But, you know, one of the things that's neat about this stuff is it allows you to demonstrate the emotion behind a lot of these nonprofits, whereas before it's been very clinical. You know, we're doing a fundraising drive, you know, so you need to go sit through the company meeting and we're going to talk about the needs and give us a check. Mm-hmm. And then the money will go somewhere. And then we learn that half the money doesn't even stay here. Makes people even more angry. Whereas now they can tell the real story behind what the dollars do. Whether it's for the Light Factory, what exhibits they're able to do with that money, or if you're volunteering, what your time is going to be used for, or whether it's for helping the homeless or whatever.
You can show it.
Yeah, you can show it. And that's back to that authentic equation. That's helping people see what is really behind the curtain. Because I think that sort of came to light through a lot of this United Way stuff, is a lot of us weren't paying attention.
Okay.
And we really didn't know. What is this organization, what is their mission exactly? And now we know. We're going to know more as the days go by.
What I wanted to add, too, is it's a matter of access. If you give out a DVD, it means you have to have a computer at your house. And what we know from the Light Factory's experience is there is a huge part of our population that doesn't have a computer in their house, and they are behind. They need to understand how to communicate electronically. They can at least come to the Light Factory. They can at least go to the library and get on the Internet and get this information. So it's actually an equalizer, is having this information on the Internet.
Rob from Children's Theater of Charlotte writes, Children's Theater has embraced social media as part of our overall communications plan. Can you ask your guests what are the most important tools or sites that they would look at if they were advising an arts theater organization? We've kind of talked about some of these already, but after the obvious Facebook and Twitter, we also use YouTube, Flickr, SurveyMonkey. Are there some biggies that we are missing?
One of the ones in the survey that was interesting were a couple, actually, forums and wikis and review sites. People, you know, love the Amazon started this years ago,
yes,
where people rate, and that's just, even when ratings are negative, sales go up. So
really?
You know, yeah. And that, they've done study after study. So
really?
You know,
why would that be?
Because it's real.
More awareness.
Yeah.
But why would you buy it? I mean, if everybody's commenting, I bought this product and it fell apart in 2 days,
well, it may
why
not
would
be,
I want to go buy it? You know,
well, it may not be that product, but another product that they recommend that other people bought. So, you know, you're getting the unvetted opinions.
So the fact that Amazon started this and it spread to Walmart, it spread to Target, their websites do the same thing. They let people, and lots of electronic websites where you buy online, and they have no bricks and mortar, allow you to post comments about their service and also about the products. That gives them an authenticity, that gives them a sense of credibility to the users? Is that what you're saying?
Sure, absolutely.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because they allow negatives,
yeah,
then they must be okay.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
It's just not the canned message saying this is the best microphone I've ever sat in front of.
Mm-hmm.
You know, well, maybe it's not. And I'll go home and say, you know, I was on the show and I didn't like this particular in it. Mm-hmm. And people respect that.
And for Rob, I had a couple of things to add. Because I don't have enough time, there's services like Ping, P-I-N-G dot FM that allows you to post it and it will publish to Twitter, MySpace, Facebook, LinkedIn. You type it once.
Yeah, like they support like 40 different sites. And then there's another site called TubeMogul, TubeMogul.com.
Mm-hmm.
That allows you to distribute videos to multiple sites. So in addition to YouTube, you can send upload a video once, and it can go to 20 or 30 other places.
Now, you guys are experts in this, and you have companies that help other people do this. But what if you can't afford you? What if I'm a nonprofit and I can't afford you? How do I find out about all of these whiz-bang things that are going on out there that I should be taking advantage of?
One of the things that we're doing at NPower is actually recruiting a core of volunteers from the technology sector to help nonprofits get started. And that's just the beginning. And so we're through our website, and I encourage everybody to visit that.
That would be NPower?
NPowerCharlotteRegion.org,
okay.
Yep. And through our Project Ignite program, we're going to be pairing those volunteers with nonprofits. We're encouraging everybody to fan NPower, and that's a way that we'll begin that communication and dialogue with those organizations. That's a beginning, and then Brandon, if you guys want to add.
Sure.
Yeah, I'd say, I mean, similar to boards, nonprofits or other groups having boards that have a marketing committee or development committee, task people who have that skill set with that charge on the board. And then get a teenager. Find somebody or get an intern from a local college or university who is willing to roll up their sleeves and try it on behalf of the organization.
Becca writes, the comment about pulling in teenagers to help nonprofits get social media ready seems to be a bit scary. Teenagers aren't trained to appropriately respond to comments and may or may not understand how every message needs to be in alignment with the mission statement of the organization. I think this skill needs to rest in the hands of a tenured marketing professional.
Well, I think my comment I actually believe that teenagers can craft messages that are effective, but I think part of my comment was to pair a teenager with somebody who already understands the message so that they're not out there, you know, necessarily on their own. That's a great learning opportunity for both.
Kathleen.
And they can be a monitoring service.
Kathleen.
They don't have to write anything. They can just watch.
Kathleen in Charlotte's on the phone. Welcome to the program, Kathleen.
Thank you. Nice to be on here.
You're welcome. Go ahead.
Well, basically, there's a foundation in Charlotte called the Foundation for Tomorrow that works out of Africa with African orphans and abandoned children, and they have raised thousands of dollars in the last 9 months via Twitter only totally volunteer. And I think one of the biggest things to point out now is with so much need here in the United States, it's really hard for other very important and relevant nonprofits to bring the rest of the world to the U.S. And social media helps them do that through pictures and Twitter, through the viral videos and so on, so that they can make Africa real here and relevant to people here in the United States, even though there's pain and suffering here that needs to be addressed.
Okay. Thank you for your call. I appreciate it.
You're welcome.
Let me share some very quick tweets here. This is from Goodwill. We treat social media equal to earned media, paid advertising, and promotions and events. David writes on our Facebook page, now that Facebook has bought FriendFeed, wunderkind of some Google alumni, there should be a lot of exciting new improvements on Facebook, yet another reason for nonprofits to get involved. 20 minutes a day is not enough time to spend on it, though. Lupus Piedmont tweets, we use social media to have real, true patient engagement about their everyday life living with lupus. And Bo sends a tweet that says, you have to be intentional about your social media activities. It is now equal to paid advertising and earned media efforts. You agree with that?
Yes. And you know, to your point of can people afford this, it's more affordable than you would think, because when we sit down with folks from the agency perspective, for example, and talk about how much time they will need to carve out if they take this on themselves, a lot of folks quickly realize they don't have the time, and it's going to take them away from the focus of what they need to be doing.
I have 15 seconds. Are there nonprofits in Charlotte using social media right now particularly effectively?
Yeah, I think you've heard from one this morning. Light Factory, Crossroads Charlotte is doing a great job. Classroom Central and Crisis Assistance Ministry have been using Facebook to recruit a lot of volunteers, so doing great things.
That's Chris Mead, Executive Director of NPower Charlotte Region. Also with us, Brandon Utley, Social Media Strategist with Ray Ward Communications, and Wynn Madry, Executive Vice President of Topics Education. Thanks all for being here. Appreciate it.
Thank you.